Hello again, Jack Aiken here, bringing to you the 26th chapter series, which we call On the Exodus, New Data, New Discoveries. This is the 19th of 26, and we call it Chapter S. As we've seen, the Nueva Peninsula geologically, geographically, and hydrologically matches the conditions as described in Exodus. We have the common travel routes across the Sinai Peninsula, sharply defined by impassable craggy rock outcroppings and mountains, through which eroded stormwater beds called wadis snake. We also know that they open up to a large white beachhead, large enough to facilitate the encampment of millions. It extends like a large delta from several wadis, and thus, to get out, the Israelites would have to backtrack or travel as far as they could northward along an arduous shoreline. Of course, there, along the shoreline on their east side, as far as the eye could see, was the wide and very deep Gulf of Aqaba, an arm of the Red Sea. We are now at the point in our effort to trace the steps taken by the Israelites from Goshen to Mount Horeb, or Sinai, during the Exodus, where we'd like to explore whether any physical evidence exists at present, indicating that the Red Sea crossing occurred from the Nueva Peninsula. For over 20 years, researchers, intrigued with the possible links from the biblical Yam Suf and the Gulf of Aqaba, have been in the area. Their searches have focused on the 600 Egyptian chariots brought by Pharaoh in pursuit of the Hebrews, mentioned in verse 7 of Exodus 14, which were destroyed in the Red Sea. Now we know from authoritative works like Biography, Tunis, Edwin Wheels, A Pictorial History by Thomas Y. Crowell Company, what these chariots and wheels looked like, as well as from ancient manuscripts and inscriptions during this period of Egyptian history. The wheels were about a meter in diameter and used either four or six spokes. These wheel types were used in Egypt no later than the 14th century BC. The design of the chariot of two wheels, which were squeaky and creaked, were basically heard wherever they went. The Egyptians didn't like this idea, and so they later lined the hubs and covered the axles with copper or bronze plates. The design of the chariot consisted of a number of new and unique ideas to make their chariot stand out. The hub was long and slender, and the spokes were light and nicely shaped. The exterior rims on the wheels, which are supported by the spokes, were inserted into the spokes, bent, shaped, and joined with a long lap. The tires were made of wood and were shaped in sections. They were attached to the wheel by lashing made of rawhide. This lashing technique was unique in that they passed it through slots in the tire sections. The reasoning for this was to keep the lashing from coming in contact with the ground, thus extending its life by lessening the wear and tear. Pole that is attached to a yoke pulled the chariots. The yoke was attached to the horse's back by saddle pads, using girths around the belly to hold them in place. The Egyptians had two types of chariots at that time, and according to Edwin Tunis and other authorities on the subject, the only important difference seems to be in the wheels. The Egyptian war chariot had six spokes, while the carriage chariots had only four. The reasoning for the difference probably has to do with extra support needed for the war chariot, since stresses that can be put on war chariots are greater than those, obviously, in which carriage chariots are subjected. So researchers at this time knew exactly what they would be searching for. Could they possibly be found in a search of the seafloor near Nueva Peninsula? So, next time, why don't we look at just what those researchers did find on the seafloor near Nueva Peninsula? And until then, thanks for listening. This is Jack Aiken.